We're in the San Fernando Valley, where Tyler McVeigh calls home. This is Van Nuys, California, is that right?
That's right.
Tyler, we're glad to have an opportunity to chat with you about your career over the years.
Well, thank you, Chuck. It's nice to be recognized as an old-style radio actor. You know?
when did you first start in radio?
I started back in my hometown, which was Bay City, Michigan, and I did some announcing there on the local radio station, WBCM, and announced, did some remotes. You know, they used to have bands come in and whatnot, and that's how I started. And then in 37, I got married for the first time, came to California, and I've been here ever since. I've been in California so long, I lie just like a native.
Well, did you move from Michigan to California with a radio job waiting
for
you?
Well, no,
here?
I came to California because I wanted to get out of the snow and ice. And
we knew somebody back there had sense.
In the back of my mind, I had the idea I wanted to get into radio or into the theater or one thing or another. Of course, in Bay City, I had done a number of plays as in high school and college and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I had the feeling that I wanted to be an actor. So the best place to go would be L.A. or New York. Mm-hmm. And I'd had enough snow and ice, so I came to California. And in those days, in 37 and 38, there weren't that many people working in radio out here. And radio was gradually moving from San Francisco down, because that's where the West Coast of radio started, was up in San Francisco. And it gradually moved down here. I think it was when they brought Lux Radio Theater out here
from
the east. Yeah. And they decided they wanted to use movie stars. And then they built NBC and CBS on Sunset Boulevard, and that's where when radio really started to burgeon here in Los Angeles. And there weren't too many people working at it. And I think even at the height there were more than maybe 150, 200 people that worked in radio, made a living at it. You know? So I just started going around to advertising agencies, and I get a job here and a job there, and after about 3 years, I was making a living at it.
Did you feel that, what were you doing? You made a living after 3 years. You were doing radio plus
well,
what else?
Well, fortunately, I had a small income at that time from my grandmother. It was about $150 a month, and that bought you quite a bit in 1937.
Yeah.
So my wife and I were able to live. You know, we had a very small apartment, and you could eat out. The two of us could eat out for $1.50 or $2 in those days.
At a really nice restaurant.
That's right. That's right. Once in a while, you could even go to the Brown Derby. You know? So, but. I think my first really good break came in 44 when I got a job with Cliff Arquette on a show called Glamour Manor, and I was on that with him for a couple of years.
And Kenny Baker was...
No, Kenny Baker followed us.
Oh, later.
He followed us, yeah. Uh-huh. Cliff and I did it for 2 years, and for some reason or other, Cliff didn't want to do it anymore. He quit. And the agency wanted to renew for another year, but for some reason or other, Cliff didn't want to, so he left. And that's when they got Kenny Baker and Don Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted 1 year, and then it was Glamour Manor was off the air.
Now, you worked for Carlton E. Morse for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked on One Man's Family for... It was a very short run, because... I was a character called Elwood Giddings, and I married... one of the granddaughters, and it was a kind of a goofy character, and old man Barber liked the character, liked me very much, but nobody else in the family liked me, and it wound up in a divorce, and I think that was the first and only divorce in the Barber family.
But Elwood Giddings was a dentist, and he was very straight and dependable, and all that sort of
thing. He lived in San Rafael, as I recall. The reason they used that character, because it was somewhat the same kind of a character that I had done on Glamour Manor, which was a kind of a, oh, I don't know, on Glamour Manor it was kind of a nitwit character. And Elwood Giddings, I used the same kind of a voice in it, you know, mm-hmm. and he was the kind of a guy that Old Man Barber would like, but nobody else liked him, you know.
Including
his wife. I don't think my wife either. You know? That was played by, I saw her. She was at the last convention. I can't remember her name now. I'll think of it before we get through talking. You know.
How did you find it to work with Carlton E. Morse?
At the time I did it, he wasn't even here. He was living up north by that time. Mm-hmm. And Mike Raffetto was directing uh-huh. the shows at that time. So, except for just meeting Carlton Morse, I never mm-hmm. really worked with him. He did his writing up there, as I recall, mm-hmm. and sent the scripts down, and Mike was directing the shows and, of course, working in them, too. I think he played Paul.
Yes,
he, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. The shows have
I think
substance.
Mike is still living in San Francisco, uh-huh. I believe. Uh-huh. And I read just the other day that one of the other sons who lived up in Ventura passed away. Paige Goldman.
Yes, he was on the show.
Yeah, I think he passed away just recently, mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. I had met him. Of course, I'd worked with him on the show, but then in later years, I lived in Ventura for a while, and he was on the newspaper up there. And I met him and renewed acquaintance with him up there.
Did you work with Gene Autry on the radio?
Yeah, mm-hmm. a lot. I did a lot of Autry shows. As a matter of fact, in I think it was in 43 or something like that, Autry was in the service, mm-hmm. and I've forgotten what his rank was, but he flew around the country doing PR for the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And his weekly radio show was done from various Air Force stations throughout the country. You know? Mm-hmm. And they couldn't fly actors from one place to another because at that time you had to have a priority mm-hmm. to fly. So there were three actors that they hired, Herb Blitton, Dick Nelson, and myself, and we rode the train to the next location. We did the show on Sunday, and then we took the train to the next location, and we just sat around until next Sunday, for which we were fairly well paid. In those days, it was a couple of $100 a week in all expenses, but that was a lot of money.
Sure.
43,
yeah,
you know.
And all the chewing gum you could do.
Yes, right.
Wrigley's.
But Autry would, as soon as the show was over, he had a plane, and he'd take off. He'd be gone all week long, and then he'd show up the next week wherever we were doing the show. As a matter of fact, we spent 4 weeks in Chicago staying at the Palmer House mm-hmm. and went from there on Sunday to the different, there was down at Champaign-Urbana, mm-hmm. there's a field down there. There was one over in Jackson, Michigan. And we also went from Chicago down to Birmingham, Alabama and did a show down there, then came back to Chicago.
Based at the Palmer House.
Yeah, right. We were there for a month. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to do any, in a fairly long run like that, were you able to do any other radio work in Chicago at that time?
I don't remember whether I did or not. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so, because we weren't there long enough to establish yourself. You know, I know some of the Chicago actors worked the show mm-hmm. when
yes.
we were there, and I can't remember their names right now because that was a while ago.
Wasn't Charlie Lyons a
Charlie was there.
That,
oh yeah,
years,
sure.
Yeah.
Of course, he's here now. You
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Did you see him yesterday?
Not yesterday, but I've talked with him.
We've Have you?
Had a chance to chat mm-hmm. about his radio career too.
Oh yeah, yeah. He comes to all the Pioneer mm-hmm. broadcast luncheons. So. And Herb Butterfield mm-hmm. was in Chicago at that time, and who later came out mm-hmm. here. And see who else, because they had several Chicago actors working on the show.
Well, a lot of the Chicago people in the up to the middle 40s then eventually moved out here.
That's right.
Some went to the East Coast, but most of them said, as you did, forget this weather.
Yeah.
And you know, the weather in Chicago was nice for about 9 months of the year, but
the other three
months can kill you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it's nice to come out here.
Sure.
Well, what other things have you done in radio?
Well, the main thing was the Glamour Manor mm-hmm, show, mm-hmm. but I also did a lot of radio commercials, mm-hmm. and I worked on a lot of Western shows. For some reason or other, I got typed as a Western actor, and I played a lot of old men, you know, and I played sheriffs and on shows like Red Rider and the Cisco Kid. There was another show called Straight Arrow that I worked quite often. Do you ever remember Straight Arrow?
Oh, sure, Straight Arrow.
Did you see Howard Culver yesterday?
No, I didn't miss him.
Yeah. Well, he was there yesterday, and he played Straight Arrow, you know.
Nabisco. And Shredded.
Was that the sponsor? I didn't remember that.
N-A-B-I-S-C-O. Don't remember?
I do now, yeah. Now that you mention it, yeah, sure I remember it. And then they had the mystery shows, I Love a Mystery, and The Whistler, which I believe was a West Coast show. Did that ever go to the
East? Well, there was a West Coast Whistler and then a Midwest Whistler, actually.
Yeah.
Here it was sponsored, I think, by Signal Oil for many years.
Yeah.
And then what they did, they had they took the same script and they redid it in the Midwest.
Oh, I see.
Out here, I think Marvin Miller...
He played
the Whistler out here.
He was first
the narrator on the show, and then he became the Whistler.
Bill Foreman, I think was the original Whistler. And Marvin was the announcer.
Yes.
And then, for some reason or other, Bill left the show, and then Marvin became the Whistler. A show that I used to listen to when I was a kid came from Detroit, I think, called The Hermit's Cave. And years later, when I came out here, I worked the Hermit's Cave, and it was a KMPC when it was a little tiny station in Beverly Hills. And the guy that played the Hermit was John Daner,
who later became
a movie.
Yeah, actor, and he was Paladin on Have Gun Will Travel on Radio.
That's right. Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah. And I lived in the valley at that time, and I used to drive over the hill to Beverly Hills to make $10. And it was a lot of fun. Virginia Gregg worked the show, and, Lou Merrill and Frank Nelson and all those people used to work that show for $10. You know.
That was before AFRA.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, not before, but it was at the time when AFRA first started. We had a rule like Screen Guild's Rule 1, pretty much, that you just can't work for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get something, you know.
And, so they gave you the basic
I remember
something.
I was doing a show called Rancho Grande here with Roy Rogers, and it was at KHJ and the Sons of the Pioneers, and I played the sheriff on it. And AFRA passed that rule that you had to get paid for doing a show, and it went off the air because nobody was getting paid. It was a sustainer, you know. They had no commercials. And it's the only show that I know of that really went off the air when they passed that rule, because a lot of people were working for nothing, you know, just to get on the air.
For exposure.
You know? Oh, sure. Yeah. Just to have the director hear you and say, well, now maybe if I get a commercial show, I'll hire this guy. You know? So
I'm wondering that they wouldn't pay them something just to keep the show on the air. Probably wasn't that important to them.
Too many people were anxious. I was one of them. Yeah. I wanted to be heard and get to know these people because I was new out here. And at that time, Virginia Gregg was a musician, and she was with a group called Harriet Wilson and the Singing Strings, and Virginia Gregg played the bass fiddle. And she used to carry this bass fiddle around with her. And, of course, later she decided to become an actress and very successful. Have you seen her? Did you talk to her?
We're going to be talking with her this week, yes.
Oh, good, yeah. Because we
bring
see her...
the bass fiddle.
We see... Yeah, tell her I said it.
Okay.
We see her every Tuesday because Esther and I do some recording for The Blind.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And Virginia is in the session just ahead of us. She's been at it about 13 years, I guess. We've been doing it about 7, I guess, something like that.
Oh, that's really fun.
It's recording textbooks for blind students, is what it is. It's different from the Braille. Mm-hmm. I think Braille, they record novels and history books and things like that, but we record these textbooks.
Mm-hmm. Have you done any work on the silver screen?
Oh, yeah. I've done a number of movies. I've never became a really... well-known person in pictures, But I did work in 7 days in May, and mm-hmm. I tell you what I did more of was live television and mm-hmm. film television. I did the first Playhouse 90 with John Frankenheimer, mm-hmm. and let's see, who else? They had a whole bunch of stars on that. There was Charlie Bickford, and there was Chuck Heston, and Jackie Coogan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, they must have had 7 or 8 stars on there.
Now, was that out here, or
yeah.
was that in the East?
No,
sure. A lot of the early TV stuff came from the East Coast, I know.
Well, no, this Playhouse 90 started here.
It did.
It started here, yeah. And it was live, mm-hmm. and it was an hour and a half, as I recall. And we'd rehearse 10 days, 2 weeks on it. And it was at that CBS down uh-huh. there, mm-hmm. Beverly and Fairfax. And we did the first show, and the second show was A Requiem for a Heavyweight, and that got all the honors,
yeah.
you know, and they forgot this first show. I thought it was a pretty good premise mm-hmm. because it was a story about the Russians infiltrating the states, and they brought people in here, and their object was to be here when the Russians... let's see, they were going to attack us Christmas Eve because they figured nobody was paying any attention mm-hmm. Christmas Eve. So that was the story. And it was never heard from again.
Did you ever
I did quite a few Playhouse 90s.
Did you? Mm-hmm. Did you do some of the other anthology series like that?
There was one Chrysler had.
Mm-hmm.
Art Gilmore was the announcer on it, and I've forgotten who the host was.
It wasn't Bob Hope, was it?
No.
Hope, I think, did a Chrysler series on TV for a while.
No, this was an anthology mm-hmm. series, and it had a one-word title. I can't remember it now. I can't remember what that was. And then there was a comedy show with My Friend Irma, and Life with Luigi. They're all live,
mm-hmm.
all
mm-hmm.
live shows in the early days. And that was a scary time.
You know. Can you remember any really terrifying experiences because of it being live?
Not that I had, but mm-hmm. I know of some things that happened, you know, and one of them was on this Chrysler show, the name of which escapes mm-hmm. me. And the actor was Tris Coffin, and he had been shot. And he was a dead body, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason or other, somebody gave him the cue that the camera was off of him before the camera was off of him, and the dead body got up on camera. And Tris was very upset about that because his name was Coffin, and of course the thing got in the newspapers, and it made him look silly. But it was the fault of the person that gave him the cue. You know?
Yeah,
there were a lot of things
that
happened on live television, like people walking through the back of the set, a workman walking through the back of a Shakespearean set, you know, and things like that.
Totally out of
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah. Do you ever do anything on the stage?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I started back home doing mm-hmm. stage shows, and then I've forgotten how I got into it here, but an agent talked me into doing a play, and I did it down in Tustin, which is in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into one of the fellows yesterday that was in the show with me, and it was called Affairs of State with Joan Caulfield. We did a little tiny theater down there. That was the first play that I did out here. And then I got into some dinner theater. I did Plaza Suite mm-hmm. with Gail Storm. We played that in Lubbock, Texas. And then I did another play with her called... I can't remember the name of that. There is the first dinner theater I did was called What Do We Do Wrong? And we did that in Lubbock, Texas mm-hmm. with my wife, Esther and I. Esther and I did that down there. That's where we kind of met, you know, and later we got married. And I wish I could think of the name of this other play that I did with Gail. It was in Columbus, Ohio. And then I did, these dinner theaters run about 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
as you
yes,
probably
uh-huh.
know. And the one in Columbus, Esther would remember it. She got a much better memory than I have.
You're active in an organization out here known as the Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters. Mm-hmm, you're mm-hmm. you're a vice president of the
organization. I'm the vice president now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is but, what is the basic thrust of that organization?
Well, the main thing is to just have a good time, really. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're supposed to have had 20 years experience in radio and television, or either one, to become a member. Mm-hmm. And we have five luncheons per year, and we always have an honored guest or two. And I think you attended the one yesterday we had honored the old-time people from early television in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. local television. Mm-hmm. And we've had Bob Hope as an honored guest, and we've had Bing Crosby and Danny Thomas mm-hmm. and Sid Caesar, and, you know, it goes on and on. It's been in existence since 62. Mm-hmm. So we're, 12 years old? Mm-hmm. No, 20.
22.
22 years old, years yeah, old. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a great organization to belong to, I'm sure, because mm-hmm. you get a chance to meet a lot of friends who are scattered, really. Los Angeles mm-hmm. area is so big, big mm-hmm. that you don't always run into everybody and gets them together. There was an awful lot. The luncheon starts at 12:30, and people mm-hmm. were piling in already at 11 o'clock, just a chance to talk.
Just
and then
to talk.
Slow
That's
leaving
right.
afterwards.
Yeah.
Nice program. It was good.
We've had shows that are better than the one we had yesterday. I think yesterday was kind of a nostalgic type mm-hmm. thing, more than entertaining. We've had some that are just hilariously funny. You know, I've got tapes of some of them here that are just knock you out. Liberace was on one time. He told a story that went on for about at least 20 minutes, and he had everybody on the floor telling about this thing that happened to him. The other thing that PPB does is to collect memorabilia. Mm-hmm. And NBC used to be at the corner of Sunset and Vine, and there is now a home savings office there. And in the basement of that, we have a club room that is donated to us by the Amundsen family. Mm-hmm. And not only the club room, but we have big storage areas, and there are recordings and scripts and you name it. We have tons of things down there, and we hope someday to be able to find a place to put them so mm-hmm. they can be on display.
Yeah.
Like old radio shows where you could have a thing, somebody can select a show and press a button and listen to a radio mm-hmm. show, you know.
It's real important, I think, that there is an organization working to gather this material and to preserve it and then to share it. That's important.
There are a lot of others doing it, too. There's I think the University of Wyoming is mm-hmm. collecting a lot of radio memorabilia.
Well, and there's a museum, a collection in New York, a broadcast museum, and mm-hmm. there's one being formed in Chicago as well.
There must be, because that was the hub of of the soap operas. Mm-hmm. In the,
and the kids' shows, too.
Oh, sure. Little Orphan Annie, I remember that. A lot of shows.
You never worked in Chicago, though, did you?
Only that time
with
the Autry show. That's the only time I worked in Chicago.
Well, we were richer for it that you were there. Well,
thank you. And the only time I worked in New York was when the Glamour Manor went there for 6 months. We lived in New York for 6 months and did Glamour Manor there. But otherwise, everything I've done has been out here.
Well, this is a nice place to be.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
And it's nice for us to have been here with you, too.
So, well, Tyler McVeigh,
thank you
over.
Very much for sharing some memories today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.